Well, it seems like we have more and more invasive plants in our Wisconsin landscape. And I can tell on our garden talk shows on Friday, often we get questions. And on our Wednesday environment shows, we often get questions about how do I get rid of this or that? Well, Kelly Kearns is with us today, the invasive plant coordinator for the Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation Program at our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Talk with her about invasive plants. Do you have invasives on your property? What are you doing to keep them under control? Maybe you have some questions about them in general. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Kelly Kearns, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
Thanks for having me.
Invasive plants, do you consider them a huge concern here in the state?
In some areas they are. In other areas they have yet to be a huge concern, but have the potential to be.
Okay. And you differentiate between invasive plants and maybe non-native plants?
Well, generally, most plants that are invasive are non-native. Most of them are actually native to Europe or Asia. They were brought over here for various reasons, sometimes intentionally, sometimes accidentally. And we also have native plants that can be pretty aggressive as well. I know we've got a question coming up about box elder trees, and that's one of our native plants that a lot of people have problems with.
We'd like to get rid of.
Yeah, so we certainly have native plants that can be aggressive as well. And so the same control techniques generally work for whatever plants you're trying to get rid of.
And the worst invasives that we have in your estimation?
Probably the one that's the hardest to remove, that's the most abundant in the state, is reed canary grass. It's very widespread in our wetlands, dominates a huge percentage of our wetlands, and is very, very difficult to control.
You know, one of the plant. You know, when I was a kid, my dad used to talk about pigweed, but that's different from hogweed, which has been getting a lot of attention this past summer. Tell us about that plant, because that's kind of new, isn't it?
It's relatively new. Giant hogweed is a plant that was brought over from Asia, probably intentionally, because it's a very big, showy plant. It gets about 12 to 15 feet tall, and the flower clusters on the top get between like 10 and 15 inches across, and there's multiple of them, and they're big umbrella-looking flowers. And the leaves can get 2 to 5 feet across, so it's a very large, robust, showy plant. And it spreads abundantly once you allow it to go to seed. And it's a federal noxious weed, in part because it actually burns your skin. So if you get the sap from the plant on your skin and there's any sunlight out at all, even on a cloudy day, then you get really badly burned from it.
Mm.
And so we have known about a few populations in the state for about 10, 12 years.
Okay.
And we just had a new population that we found out about this year.
Popped up.
And so that one got a fair amount of attention.
Yeah, and where are the locations, general locations of those?
The ones we've known about for a while have been in Iron County and Manitowoc County. We've had another one in Portage County, and then the new one we found this year was in Sheboygan County.
So it's getting around.
Well, yeah, probably all of those populations were intentionally planted at one time or accidentally brought in from a population that somebody like had their equipment at and they accidentally dragged the seeds in.
So, and getting rid of them, you can't just go in there barehanded and pull them out.
No, it's a multiple-year process to control them. Because it's a plant that only goes to flower once and then dies, it's relatively easy to control compared to things that are true perennials. And so the goal is to not ever allow it to go to seed. And so as soon as a plant flowers, which may be, the plant may be 3, 4, 5, 6 years old before it's old enough to flower, then you make sure that you get those stems cut down, you get those flower heads removed so that they don't spread their seed. And then you can also treat the basal, the rosettes too, the younger plants, either by cutting them out or treating them with an herbicide.
Okay, very good. Well, we have 4 incoming lines and every one of them is full, so let's take a call and find out what we've got in store for us here. Connie in Arcadia, thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
My Queen Anne's lace. I remember... finding it along the roadside by my house years ago, I'm thinking, oh, that's a very nice flower, and it's taken over. You find it all over. I'm in western Wisconsin, and it just seems like, and I've gone and pulled as much as I can, but is that invasive, or am I imagining that?
No, you're not imagining it. Queen Anne's lace is another plant from Europe, and it was actually introduced intentionally. It's the same plant as our carrot, and it's just kind of the carrot gone wild.
Yeah.
And because it's a biennial, a lot of the biennials are really difficult. So the first year, it has this basal rosette, overwinters as this green plant, and then in the second year, it produces its flower and goes to seed. So the trick with all of these biennial species is not let them go to seed. And if you can mow at the proper time, which is when it's just kind of begun flowering, and then mow again when it reflowers, then you can keep it from spreading aggressively. However, it is quite abundant and quite widespread, and so the seed will get around and you will continue to have it. And most people do have it on their property. If they have any kind of open grassland, they will have Queen Anne's
lace. And it looks like what?
It looks like a carrot.
Yeah.
So it's got very frilly, ferny-type leaves, has a umbrella-shaped flower that's in the 2 to 4 inch range across, and it smells like a carrot.
Yeah. So there we go. So, you know, and I like what you were talking about here, in a way, cutting and getting, forcing the plant not to seed, go to seed, because that's a way you minimize the spread of this thing.
Right.
Or any other weed for that matter, or many other weeds.
Yeah,
a
lot of plants produce spread only by seed. And so that's the best way to control them, is to just prevent the spread of the seed. And so that means that you have to be careful about when you do things like mowing. If you were to mow that Queen Anne's lace or wild parsnip or some other plant like that, when it's in seed, you're just spreading those seeds around. If you were hiking through those areas after they produce seed and you had got mud on your shoes, and then you walk to a new area, you're probably spreading those seeds around. If you're a deer or a dog and you pick up some of these seeds on your fur, you're moving them around. You do the same thing with your clothing. So there's lots of ways that people move these plants around. And so trying to keep those seeds from getting moved around is going to be the best way to keep them out of new areas.
Other ways to minimize spread of plants?
Cleaning gear is really important for people like loggers. They have been trained over the years now to make sure that they clean their gear before they go into a forest site, and then clean after they've been in an area, so that they don't introduce plants like garlic mustard. We know that in the past, people have oftentimes gotten garlic mustard on their property after they've had some kind of a timber sale. So anybody who has any kind of a gear, whether it be a utility truck or a lawnmower or then clean your gear after you've gone through one area before you go to another area will really help minimize the spread.
Tim in Sauk City has something for us. Hi, Tim. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about box elder trees. Well, first off, I always thought they were invasive. I didn't know they were native, so thanks for that info. They are reaching way over and sort of shading out large portions of our forests and things like that. I heard that if you cut them down, then they'll send up suckers pretty much indefinitely. Is that true?
That is true. Yeah, generally what box elder will do is it'll stump sprout, which means that the sprouts will come off directly off that stump, as opposed to sending up suckers farther away from the plant, which some plants that are clonal will do. Fortunately, box elder is not clonal, and so if you can cut that plant down and kill the stump and with an herbicide that gets down into the root system, then you can prevent that resprouting. So an herbicide such as triclopyr that you put on that cut stump, or you do a basal bark application where you apply that herbicide before you cut it and let it get down into the root system, can be effective. Or you can wait until it sends up those resprouts and apply the herbicide to the foliage on those resprouts. And you may have to do that repeatedly.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tim. Appreciate the call. Well, let's turn to Kathleen in Madison next. Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have Japanese knotweed.
Too bad for you.
Exactly. I bought the house in the winter now quite a few years ago. If I ever buy another house, I will require them to disclose whether there's Japanese knotweed, because I have a nearly biblical battle with this stuff. And I mean that almost literally. I poured salt down the cane only to find that it's riverine, kind of like salt. Mm-hmm. So I'd like any advice that both of you could provide on timing for spraying with the poison ivy, chemical, and any other tips in how to fight this clonal.
Okay. So for people who aren't familiar with it, Japanese knotweed is often mislabeled as Mexican bamboo. It's actually Japanese, and it is a knotweed rather than it being from Mexico. And it's oftentimes found in urban areas in people's yards. And oftentimes, I assume, Kathleen, you're in an urban area?
Yes, yeah. I have a large urban lot.
So a lot of times it actually crosses property lines. And so because it's all one big clonal plant, if it's in your neighbor's property as well, then it's all sharing the same root system. And so you killing it on your side of the fence is not going to kill the whole thing, because unless your neighbor kills it on their side of the fence as well. So it's really important to go after every single stem in that population so that you can actually kill it. And with knotweed, no matter what method you use, you're probably not going to get it controlled in 1 year. It's probably going to take at least 2 to 3 years to really completely knock it out. What most people do is it's best to apply an herbicide to it when it's really small. You don't have to use nearly as much herbicide. You can be much more targeted in what you do. So if you can get rid of the old dead stems that look like bamboo, get rid of them in the winter, then when the new stems come up in the spring, you apply an herbicide to those, and then that'll kill them off, and then it'll pop back up again, and you do it again. So every time it gets 1 to 2 to 3 feet tall, then you apply that herbicide again. Doing it at least in the spring after it's emerged, and then again in the fall, is important. If you've let it go to the point where it's already 8 feet tall, you can cut it back and then allow it to resprout again, and then hit those resprouts, because it'll keep happening. There's a couple of herbicides that can be used. You can use glyphosate, which more people know as Roundup. It's probably not quite as effective as an herbicide called aminopyrrolid, which the usual chemical that people use for that is called Milestone, and that one's just a little bit more effective. You can also use triclopyr, which is the same chemical that's used for killing brush. So
I have applied both Roundup and triclopyr over the years, and I even snuck around the fence into the commercial property that on the other side of my fence. I'm sure they planted it as an erosion control many years ago. But I haven't tried, did you say amino?
Aminopyrrolid, yes.
Pyrrolid.
And the common milestone. Name for that is milestone.
Okay. Well.
Twice a year. At least twice a year, Kathleen.
Yeah, and then keep cutting it back, too. Make sure you hit every stem.
And thanks a lot for calling. She's persistent. She wants to get rid of it. I bet she does if she keeps at it. Talking about invasive plants today and invasive species in Wisconsin with Kelly Kearns of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45 today, we have a couple of more guests from the DNR, and they'll be talking about our public lands here in the state. So looking forward to that. In the meantime, visiting with Kelly Kearns about invasive plants in Wisconsin, and looking forward to hearing from you at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Jackie in Sun Prairie next. Jackie, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have two questions. The first one is probably a yes and no. I happen to love the American lotus, which is found in a number of places that I know, one in Madison and Warner Park. And they are these lush yellow-white flowers with huge leaves lily pad, so to speak. And then there's another one in southern Columbia County. I was wondering, I know they're natural, but are they invasive? And I have a little pond that I'd like to plant them in, but I don't know. I want to check first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yes, you are right. They are native, and they also are pretty aggressive. They, in several places that I've seen them this year, including Warner Park, they have taken off and really spread quite aggressively this year to the point where they're excluding some other species. So I wouldn't necessarily call them invasive because we haven't seen them, you know, be really aggressive over a really long time and to the point where it's impacting the environment. But it's certainly one to watch for, and that people who manage some of these sites may want to go in and try to manage for some of those by going and cutting them or something. If you wanted to put them in your pond, if your pond's small enough, you can easily hand control these things. Just go in and pull them up if they're getting to be too abundant. So. Uh-huh. I would say that it's fine for you to plant these. So just watch them.
Yep.
The other question I had, it kind of relates to the knotweed, Japanese knotweed. I too bought a piece of property about 10, 11 years ago, and there was an interesting shrub that started getting, and it was planted by a nursery, a local nursery here, which looks very much like the knotweed, only it only gets about, maybe knee high, but you can't let it be with anything else because it'll take over the whole area. And in the fall, it has a kind of a pinkish flower that is a bunch of flowers that are on a stem, you could say, and they just hang down. But I don't know why they planted them, but it took over everything except for the evergreens. I've been trying to get rid of it, and I've been kind of successful by doing what you suggested. But is there a certain kind of plant that nurseries actually plant that's like the Japanese knotweed?
Well, there is a cultivar of Japanese knotweed called Compacta that fits your description. It's much smaller, stays about knee height, and has more pinkish flowers. And it also can get very dense. And occasionally it sends up a sprout that's much taller. And they should not be selling it in Wisconsin. It's a regulated species and has been since 2009. So both the straight Japanese knotweed and all of its cultivars are regulated in the state. But my guess is that yours was planted before then.
Yeah, 2004.
Yeah.
Lucky you.
Slowly getting rid of it by doing what you suggest with a glyphosate in the spring and in the fall, and whenever I see it in the meantime, I pull it out, and, you know, I'm slowly getting it down. So, yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Good for you. John in Wausau, we'll turn to you next. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry and Kelly. How are you?
Great.
Good.
Appreciate the call.
Hey, thanks. Well, I've got a very strange question, and I never thought I'd be asking it, but here it is. I have lilies of the valley that are going nuts everywhere all over my property, and I don't know how to control them. Are they invasive? And the problem is that I can't see the flowers. It's all leaves.
Hmm. Okay, so lily of the valley are from Europe or Asia, and so they are not native, and they certainly can be very aggressive, especially in very shady environments.
Yep,
oftentimes they'll move from somebody's landscape yard into an adjacent forest and just spread throughout that forest. So certainly they can be problematic. So if the area that you're working with is actually a lawn, then it's fairly easy to use a broadleaf weed herbicide such as 2,4-D and knock out the lily of the valley and not kill the grass. My guess is that you
What is the herbicide called?
2,4-D. It's a very commonly used herbicide that kills broadleaf plants but not grasses.
I see.
Yeah,
so,
but
somebody said I had to dig them up, and it's like there's thousands of them.
Wow, that would be a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you need to do that. And then you're going to want to mow fairly low as well to just knock off those leaves. But they have a fairly decent-sized root system, and so they're really going to be able to persist for a while unless you use some kind of herbicide.
And then when would you recommend applying that?
Probably in the spring when they're actively growing.
Okay.
Ideally when they're in flower.
Oh, when in flower?
Yeah, so that would be early May, probably.
Yep, that sounds about right. And, hey, is there anyone I can send? There's actually a hedge that I wanted to find out what it is from my neighbor's yard and start one. Is there anyone that could identify foliage if I sent it somewhere?
Usually you can take a little sprig of it and take it into your local nursery, and they'll be able to help you figure that out.
Okay.
Most nursery people will have somebody on staff that can ID for you.
And if you're near your extension office, your county extension office, you can take it in there, and one of the master gardeners likely knows.
Oh, like in UW Marathon?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So extension office?
Yeah, the county extension office.
Okay.
And,
hey,
you know,
thank you guys.
Yeah, and you might even be able to do it without going in if you can take a close-up photo and a long, you know, kind of a longer shot, and then a close-up of the leaves. They might be able to just do it via email.
Oh, perfect. Well, hey, I always love listening to your show. Thank you. Thank you, Kelly.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling, John. Appreciate your call. And join in yourself if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to John in Columbus next. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry and Kelly. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
I got a question for you. I was told that the best time of year to spray for plantains is in the fall, and I did try some 2,4-D, and it does seem to be knocking them back, but I'm wondering if there would be a granular product that I could use, be a little easier to apply.
Boy, I don't work much with turf weeds, so I'm not really familiar with that.
Okay.
I would say that I'm guessing that there is probably an extension publication that covers plantain, but generally, you're not going to want to use a granular as an herbicide in a lawn. It's just not going to be very targeted. And what you're trying to do with something like plantain is get it on the foliage to kill that plant. And a granular is really not going to work that way.
If you go to the Learning Store, University of Wisconsin Learning Store Extension, learningstore.uwex.edu. I'm almost sure you're going to find a publication there. If not, the University of Wisconsin Horticulture Department, if you go to their website, they have an area on plants and weeds that you can go to.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And we had an email I want to get to here as well, if I can ever figure out how to get the mouse to cooperate with me. Yvette emailed to say she has Horeolissum all over her farm. Land was severely degraded when she got it. She plowed it under, fertilized, and replanted with a grassy horse and pony mix. She followed up with winter weed and more fertilizer as per co-op, and the Horeolissum has taken over this brand new field.
Well,
so what the heck do we do with that?
That's a problem, because Horeolissum is actually toxic to horses.
Oh.
And so I would say the first thing she needs to do is make sure she doesn't have her horses in that field, and really be careful about what they're eating. Horeolissum, I don't have any details with me on what the best herbicide would be for controlling that, but I would guess that if you use a broadleaf herbicide, that's really going to be what you need to do, because obviously you want grasses to persist in the site. And so ideally, she probably should have used the herbicide before she did all this work to actually knock it back. But she also has had seed in the ground for years and years, and so it's going to keep coming up. And so she may need to consistently use an herbicide, you know, watching the plants, seeing when the Horeolissum comes up. As soon as it's several inches tall, then hitting it with that herbicide and, you know, keeping the horses out of there until it's gone, and then, you know, maybe letting them come in after that.
No. So that could be a long-term project.
It could be.
Yeah. Well, Jay in Two Rivers has something for... Oh, we got another lawn question. I don't know. Well, it's Creeping Charlie, I think. Jay?
Yes, good morning, folks. Thank you. I'd sure trade those Lily of the Valleys for what I think is my Creeping Charlie problem. The leaves are about the size of a 50-cent piece, and they've taken over a lot of the grassy area that suffers when we lack rain here in Two Rivers for a month or more every summer. And I'm wondering if I should just let it go because it's nice and green and seems to do okay in the drought, or if there's something I can do to just target the creeping Charlie.
Battling creeping Charlie is a challenge that many of us have. And in a lawn, you can use an herbicide such as 2,4-D that will kill it and not kill the grass. If it's moving into your planting beds or into your strawberries, your vegetables, whatever, then it's a little more problematic. You can't use those herbicides there. And there you're going to either have to hand pull or let it take over. So I think that you need to consider how much effort you want to put into this and if it's something that you're going to be consistent and working on over the years. Because if it's completely taken over, it's going to take some time to take care of. If it's in a new area and just starting to get in, then I'll let Larry answer this because he has a story on this one.
Well, I actually hand pull it, and you can hand pull a lot. You get the relative out there, spouse, or I get my daughter out there, and we hand pull it in the spring. In the spring, it's easier to hand pull, and in a half hour, you'd be amazed at how much you can pull, and it really cuts back. It cuts it back. But I can also tell you that I completely got rid of it on a previous lawn. I mean, I used herbicide and I got completely rid of it, and then within 2 years it was right back. It was right back because the neighbors had it and it just comes across.
And you've got the seed in the soil, and yeah. So the best times if you are going to be using herbicide to do that is when it's in flower or after other things have started to go dormant.
The only kind of upside of creeping Charlie is that in the spring when it is in flower, that's all. It's also a source of nectar for a lot of our bees and insects, and there isn't a lot else flowering at the time it is flowering. So that's another thing to kind of think about too, if you're thinking about controlling it in flower. That's something to think about.
Well, that's been real helpful. Thanks for the suggestions.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Pat in Green Bay up next. Hi, Pat.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, y'all. Actually, I have a camp up in Price County, and there's these plants growing next to the goldenrod and the mustard, and they look like Queen Anne's lace, but the tops are pinch them, and they're all citrusy, like a chamomile. Is there a wild chamomile?
There is a wild chamomile, but it's very short. It's only, like 6 inches tall, so it wouldn't be as tall as Queen Anne's lace would be.
Sure. This is about up to my belt buckle. And very interesting stuff. I didn't want to chop it down, at camp. It was so kind of nice. It had green flower balls, and then within about a week, it was really dark, rusty brown tops. I haven't seen any critters on it, but it sure was interesting. I don't know if you could use it for something or.
So, do the flowers ever turn yellow?
I was just up there a couple of weeks ago in the fall. I didn't see it when it was.
I suspect, considering that you're in Price County, that it is tansy. Common tansy is really abundant in northern Wisconsin, especially on roadsides, and then it moves into other grassland areas. And it has a divided leaf and an umbrella-shaped flower that's yellow, and then it turns brown this time of year. Very, very strong smell. And that's quite invasive. So I recommend that you, at minimum, don't allow those seeds to spread.
Okay, chop it down, get rid of it. We can't use it for anything, right?
It has medicinal uses, but it also has some toxicity, so I would be cautious with it.
Okay, now let's not talk too much about that, but that's great. If it's got medicinal uses, that's there for a reason.
Well, take a look. You might want to just research it a little bit to, in terms of the medicinal uses, but you got to be careful with that stuff.
Yeah, it has spread quite a bit throughout northern Wisconsin.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. And let's go to Ron next. Ron in White Lake. It is your turn. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I have a question about vetiver, which is a perennial bunch grass, and I'm wondering if that is an invasive in Wisconsin or if there's something else that I could plant that would work for erosion control that's similar in species?
Okay, so vetiver is a grass that I've heard of, but I don't know what it is specifically. You don't happen to have the scientific name with you?
I could look it up, but it would take a minute.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I've heard of it as being invasive elsewhere, but not here. So chances are it probably won't persist here very well. If you're looking for a grass to grow for erosion control, what kind of a situation are you in? Is it sunny, shady? What kind of soils?
Rocky, sandy fill that I put in over antigo-type loam. So, and it's on a hillside, partially shaded.
Yeah.
And you're trying to grow grass rather than other plants there because you're going to be wanting to mow it?
Well, no, it's too steep to mow, but I'm trying to stop the hill from continually collapsing with runoff.
Okay. I would guess your best bet is to find some kind of a mix that would include a number of different species of grasses and possibly some legumes that you could put in there as well that would prevent it from that would build up the soil and have significant root systems. And just try a bunch of different things so that you can get in there. Just make sure you don't use anything that's invasive like crown vetch.
There are some, yeah, even you go to a place, one of the nurseries, like Prairie Nursery, for example, they have mixes that you might be able to use on that hillside. In fact, I think they have specific mixes and other nurseries as well. I just want to mention them.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to check, and I think that's a great idea to get a mixture.
Yeah, I think that's going to be your best bet because then some species will take well and some won't. And so you'll have better success with that.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Ron. And Marilyn emailed to ask if cow parsnip and hogweed are related, and are they removed in the same way?
Yes. So cow parsnip, we got a little press on the hogweed this year, we got lots and lots and lots of false reports of hogweed. I got over 200 that I had to deal with, and most of them were cow parsnip. Some were Queen Anne's lace and wild parsnip and other things, but cow parsnip is very closely related to giant hogweed. It's the same genus, and it looks very similar to it, but it's much smaller, and it's actually native here. And so, again, not letting it go to seed is really the key. And some people are sensitive to cow parsnip as well. So if you're going to be doing any work on it, just make sure you've got long sleeve, long pants, your gloves that cover your wrist, and you really are covered up well.
Yeah. All right, now on to Susie in Madison. Hi, Susie. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. Hey,
morning.
I have a question concerning the 2,4-D and the Lily of the Valley that you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
My Lily of the Valley totally surrounds a birch tree in my yard, and then the Lily of the Valley also goes right up along next to a large perennial garden. Would it still be safe for the birch tree and the other garden to use that 2,4-D?
2,4-D should not be impacting your tree as long as you're just keep it off the trunk. I would say just, you know, if you're doing it in your yard, then I would get a piece of cardboard or something like that and just use it to keep between where you're spraying and the plants that you want to protect, especially in that perennial bed. Just block off the perennial bed so that you can spray the Lily of the Valley without that herbicide getting on any of your perennials. Your perennials will definitely be killed by it, but the birch tree shouldn't be. There are a few herbicides that will kill trees if you're spraying underneath them, and you need to be really careful with them. Mm-hmm. Tordon is one, which is a restricted-use chemical, and another one is Habitat that is being used a lot for working on Phragmites, for example. It's a Mazapyr. That one, it definitely will kill trees, but 2,4-D should be okay.
And when you put the 2,4-D on, it stays wet, and then after it soaks in, then it's... Say, so if it rains and some rainwater goes down by the perennial garden, they should do it at a time where maybe it's not going to rain for a few days or something like that?
Correct. Anytime you apply an herbicide, you want to do it when it's not going to be raining for a while, and you want to make sure that nobody goes into the area after it's been sprayed until it's completely dry, because then you could track it into your house.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And Jim in Land O'Lakes, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, appreciate the call.
Sure, I'd like to know how to get rid of hemp nettle.
Okay, so hemp nettle is a plant that's been found a lot in the northern forest in some of the understory, and is pretty aggressive up in some of those forests. And so have you tried hand-pulling it or using rakes or anything to pull it out?
Yeah, I've hand-pulled it, but, you know, there's so much of it that I'd be hand-pulling all my life.
Yeah. So I would guess that you've got it there somewhat because there's some disturbance. So, you know, trying to minimize the disturbance would be one of the things. But then also you've got seed that's in the soil, so you'll probably have it even if you continuously, you know, control it for the next couple of years. It'll probably reemerge over the next several years. So if hand pulling is too difficult, then I would say you're going to need to move to using some kind of an herbicide. And you could either be very targeted and use something like glyphosate that will kill anything that it touches, or you can use something like, again, like a broadleaf herbicide like 2,4-D, but just be really careful about the other plants that are in the area so you don't affect them. Again, using that kind of a system of blocking off the plants you want to keep as opposed to the ones that you're trying to spray.
If I would weed whack it before the plant went to flower, so that I would eventually, over a course of a couple of years, eliminate or reduce the seed source. Would that help?
That should help. But one of the things that you'll want to watch out for is just is make sure that you're doing it before any seeds have been produced. A lot of plants will flower over a long period of time, and they'll have some seeds will already be produced while it's also flowering. So just make sure you catch it in that early flowering stage.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Kelly, we've got a conference coming up I wanted to have you mention as well, and that's related to all that we're talking about here.
That's right. So every 2 years, we have the Upper Midwest Invasive Species Conference, and it's shared between Minnesota and Wisconsin is where we have it, and we have people come in from all over the Midwest, and it's a multi-taxa conference. So we deal with invasive plants, aquatic species, pests that affect forest trees and other things, feral hogs, wide range of things that we talk with there. And so it's going to be October 17 through 19 this year, and it's in La Crosse this year. And so if anybody is interested in attending, it would be a good thing for anybody who does volunteer work on invasives. If you're just a landowner who's doing a lot of work on it, then you might be really interested in attending. The website for it is umisc.net, and should be pretty easy to find.
UMISC.net,
Upper Midwest Invasive Species Conference.
All right. Kelly, it's always a pleasure. You know, I bet if we were on for 4 hours, we'd get calls for 4 hours.
Probably so. Everybody has problems.
Everybody has problems, so we'll look forward to you. And by the way, there are some publications available at the DNR. I didn't want you to mention that. You've got an invasive species page.
Mm-hmm.
And with some fact sheets and everything, too.
Right. And there's a lot of things at the Learning Store as well from UW Extension. Midwest Invasive Plant Network has some really good control information on there. So there's lots of good places online that you can go to for more information.
Well, appreciate your visit. Thank you so much for coming by. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Kelly Kearns, our guest today. Kelly, the invasive plant coordinator for the Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation Program of our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Oh, she does such a great job. It's always great to have her along. And we will have her back. Coming up, though, we're going to take a look at a place where there are some invasives. Some of our public lands have invasives. But we'll zero in on the public lands of Wisconsin, what we've got and where we're going with them, and a couple of guests to talk about that next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.